Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode. Today we have Georgie, aka Georgie the Naturopath on Instagram. Georgie is a qualified gut health expert, nutritionist, and anxiety mindset coach. Georgie has a holistic approach and works under her philosophy of mind gut lifestyle anxiety reset method, which is a system to help people explore and understand how the food we eat, our gut, our microbiota, our genetic predispositions, and various lifestyle factors relate to how we think and feel. Georgie, it is so wonderful to have you on our little potty. We are so delighted and look forward to picking your brain today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that intro.
We are so excited. Obviously, there is such a big overlap with your field of study and our field of study. We're so excited to explore that with you.
Yeah, we're going to have a great chat, I know. Yes.
So before we jump into it, Georgie, Amy and I do something every week, and we do a pit and peak of the week. So if you feel comfortable, please share with us your pit and peak of the week.
Well, I would have to say my pit of the week, I've had a pretty good week, to be honest, like not too much going on, other than I've got this new kitten, which he's the peak of my week in many ways. Like, he's so gorgeous and so cute and snuggles up under my neck every night when I'm sleeping. But he's chewed through my headphones, which is why today I'm here without headphones and just the microphone. And it's been, honestly, I know that sounds such a trivial thing, but I love like plugging in my headphones, going out for walks, listening to podcasts, listening to music, going for runs, listening to music. And I can't do any of that at the moment. So I've been this weirdo playing my phone on loudspeaker, playing music while I go out. And every time someone walks past me, I have to like turn the volume down. So that has been my pit of the week. I've got some new headphones on the way though.
I can imagine you walk around, you know how you used to wear boom boxes and they had the loud music playing?
Yeah, that's me. And everyone thinks I'm so like obnoxious, you know, like running past like my Beyonce playing or whatever.
They're just jealous.
Yeah.
Okay, and did you also say your peak was your kitten?
It would have to be my kid. I mean, he's just so gorgeous.
Like, what's his name?
Perfect. His name is Maximus. And he's just like, oh, the most delightful little thing. But as I said, I've had to shut him out of the room today, because if I didn't, I've had him on my podcast before where he's like climbed onto my shoulder in the middle of an interview, and it's just very distracting. Very cute, but very distracting.
How old is he? Is Maximus?
He's 3 months now.
And we forgot to mention, Georgie, you're currently in lockdown. You're located in Victoria at the moment, so I'm sure a kitten is such a nice companion to have while you battle through lockdown and restrictions.
Exactly. No, I've in many ways I feel very fortunate. Like, I've got my kitten. I'm actually not fully in Melbourne. I'm down on the peninsula, which means I've got the access to the beaches and walks around there, which makes me feel so like alive every day, you know, just being able to be in nature. And grounding and so nice to have that. But yeah, you know, lockdown is its own thing. But as I said to you guys before, we were just having a chat, I'm feeling this sense of, you know, things are opening up. It's slow, but it's like there's this sense of, okay, it can't get worse than it was, so it's only going to start opening up. And with spring here, weather getting better, you know, there is definitely a sense of optimism and hope in the air that I think we've sorely needed this year.
Definitely. Light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak.
Yeah.
Love the positive outlook. So tell us, for our listeners that don't know you, Georgie, can you tell us a little bit about you and how you came to be in your respected field?
Okay, good question. So it's like, where do we start when it's about me? But like, it's one of those things, looking back, it's like obvious. The story all makes sense. I can see all the pieces line up. But I tell you, going through it, I was like, what am I doing? Who am I meant to be? What's going on the whole time? But, you know, and it's funny how life, those pieces do fall into place. And I always love those moments when you have that realization and you're like, it's all happened for a reason. I can see how it has all come together. Because then we go back into the what's happening and why it doesn't make sense. And we just go in and out of those moments of it not making sense, and then it makes sense again. And so for me, it really started when my anxiety was at its worst around like I was always in high school, like a good student. So I was a type A, very diligent with all of that. And I cared a lot about impressing boys and having a social life and like doing all the things, right? Mm-hmm. But then, so my anxiety showed up in that sense, but it was very, very manageable. It was just kind of like a little like, oh, got to be perfect all the time. Mm-hmm. But then in 2010, my parents got divorced, and that was a whole, I'd had such a beautiful, safe, lovely childhood that coming up to that point, I was 19 years old. It just really, it set me up for a huge shock. You know, mm-hmm. I hadn't had anything kind of shake my foundations to that point. And so when, you know, dad, you know, announced that he was leaving mum, it was a whole thing. And my body was just in constant fight or flight mode, just feeling like the rug had been pulled out from under me. Like, this is not how things were meant to go. Life was meant to, my parents were meant to stay together. Or like the family was meant to be in this one unit the whole time. And to not have that, to have everyone fall apart, it, I didn't know, you know, I felt like I wasn't going to have a family anymore, you know, and that stability. And so I'd wake every day kind of feeling like life had gone wrong and anticipating something else going wrong. And I didn't know what it was. It was just always this looming something. Maybe I wasn't going to find my purpose. Maybe I wasn't going to, you know, live up to my own expectations. What if this other big thing happens and I'm not safe, you know? Mm-hmm. And so from there, I suppose I started to look into, you know, some self-development stuff and spirituality, I suppose, started to come out of my spiritual closet in many ways, because I think I'd always yearned for that kind of deeper connection to something. Mm. But I'd been raised atheist. I'd been raised without a religion, which I see as giving me a clean slate in many ways to then go and formulate my own belief systems and what I felt gravitated towards. And so that was a huge part for me. But absolutely too, I heard this idea of, you know, if you eat these foods, if you look after your gut health, then you can literally change the way that your mind works and the way that you feel. And at that point, I kind of took it too much to the extreme, because I was very much like, I can't control what's happening on the outside of my life, but I can control the inside. So I'm going to like eat the perfect diet, and then it will all be perfect and my life will be perfect. And this is what I always kind of, being a nutritionist, you know, I always warn so many young girls kind of look up to nutritionists, and the way we think that the web, you know, you have to have this perfect diet all the time. And it's just not the way it works. If you have all these food rules, you're going to make your anxiety worse in some ways. So there has to be this balance of like actually coming from the right place with it and not letting it be the end of the world. If you have some flexibility in your diet, it has to be flexible. So, but I learned that lesson myself through the hard way of like going too far, restricting. I'd go into then binging because I had too many rules. And that cycle really was with me when I started my studies, when I started doing my bachelor degree, which was 4 years of study. And I took that sense of, yeah, trying to get this perfect diet into that, but slowly unraveled myself and learnt, you know, that wasn't going to be the answer for me. And from there, yeah, moved into working with clients and I've just always loved working with anxiety, because that's what I was looking for. I was looking for the answers to how can I find that balance, you know, within my body, within how my system works, so that everything in life is just that bit easier to manage, you know? And so I don't want to contradict myself, but you know, the food is important. If you're eating junk and you're eating lots of sugar and stuff all the time, you're going to make life harder for yourself, because your nervous system can't kind of cope with that in the same way. We need protein. We need to make calming chemicals in our brain. We need so many different nutrients, and we can build that resilience to all of these triggers in our lives when we do that. You know, we need sleep, we need exercise, and all of those things can help us to manage the life around us. I suppose it's just about it not needing to be perfect. That's the key. Balance. You can have the balance, but let it not be perfect too.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's something that Kat and I have in common with you. I remember when we were at uni and we thought it was so silly that there were no degrees that you could study with psychology that linked to dietetics or nutrition. I remember having this conversation with Kat years ago, and I think Kat actually approached someone in uni and asked, like, hey, is there any dietetics courses we could integrate with our psychology degree? Because we knew that what we put into our body is inextricably linked to our mental health and our overall well-being, and that, you know, our gut is our second brain, and, you know, it actually produces more serotonin than our brain does. So just the importance of having a nutrient dense and nutrient rich diet with our mental health. And there wasn't anything available at the time. And yeah, I guess that was just baffling for us how important our diet is with our overall well-being, really.
And it's one of those, it was always a bit of a like a no-brainer to me as well, that like, of course, when your blood sugar's out of balance and you're not feeding yourself properly, like I even feel it now, like if I leave it too late to eat lunch, for example, I'll start to feel that drop in my blood sugar, and I'll start to feel some anxiety. And it's not about there's something being wrong with my brain, it's simply that I haven't been feeding my body correctly that day, and I just need and as soon as you know it's blood sugar, because as soon as you eat, oh, it's gone, like you're calm. And that's what's so like potent about this connection. I'd love to start one day, one of my goals like later down the road is to start a certification where I can teach people, if they want to learn like how to combine the nutrition, the gut health, all of that with a bit of the mindset stuff, and be a coach in that sense as well.
And it's so easily overlooked. I know from what Ames was saying is that I guess through our course is that there was like, you know, we're not really taught to look at diet. I mean, we're kind of thought, you know, you kind of need to screen clients for sleep and diet, but it was such a small part of a diagnosis. And I think something that Ames and I are so passionate about is that really holistic approach to mental health. And I know that you are too, because I think food has such a huge, you know, influence on our mood. And I feel like only within the last 5 years, I could be wrong, but there's been an explosion of studies with, you know, the connection with gut and mental health. Is that how you've been kind of, is that what you've noticed as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's been probably, I'd say the last, like even the last 15 years, really, we've really started to get into what all the ins and outs of gut health. It's fascinating. And I mean, you know, just to put into context how important this is, I love to, like, on one hand, I will say it's a component. It's not the only thing that, like, you can't just, if you have this perfect gut diet, which I'm sure I'll talk you through in this as we chat, but that's not all there is. Like, if you're also waking up and you're hating yourself every day and you're saying horrible things to yourself, like, or you're not sleeping properly, like all these things have to be working together. And you do a pretty good job. You do like a 70 to 80% job of all those things, you're going to be great. Like, but there's wiggle room to not get it perfect. But in terms of how important our gut is, I mean, we have 10 times the number of microbe cells in our gut compared to human cells. 10 times that. And each of these microbes have like genetic makeup that influences how our body responds, how our brain responds to the environment, and how easily we can kind of calm ourselves down. Like, you know, when you try and sit down and meditate and you've been triggered and you really like the brain's pinging around, it can be really hard to sit down and just like calm, but it's so much easier to do that when our nervous system actually is receiving the signals in a healthy way to calm down. Mm. So this comes from things like nutrition and our gut health as well. We have 3.3 around, I mean, the numbers change depending on the study you read, but one I've read is 3.3 million genes in the microbes that we have in our body, and only 23,000 human genes.
Wow.
So we are so much more microbe than we are human, which is kind of like really hard to get your head around. But you got to think of it, your gut, it's not just what's in your gut. So there's a lot of it's in your gut, but a lot of it's on your skin. So your microbes are hanging out on your skin. They're around your reproductive system as well. So, and we're even discovering microbes. We used to think that the body inside was completely free of microbes, like there was no bacteria or anything, but there actually are microbes within our vital organs and things like that as well, which is quite fascinating and a very new kind of area of research too.
And as you say, it all kind of makes sense when you unpack it. And the other way as well, like we often speak with clients around having an anxious tummy and how physiologically anxiety can really disrupt our gastrointestinal tract, and we can develop a lot of real physical symptoms associated with anxiety. And I think with that in mind, and we absolutely love how informative you work around anxiety and caring for anxiety. That's another, I guess, aspect that we have in common, is that anxiety isn't something to be feared. It's something to really look after. And I guess we were just wondering, what was your driving force to focus on anxiety as a nutritionist?
I suppose it's just been, you know, the classic of like, that was the thing that I struggled with, and that's what I really wanted answers on. And I think I did go through years of the trial and error of like going, okay, but like my diet's perfect, why am I still anxious? And then realizing, okay, it's because I'm so worried about my diet being perfect that I'm still anxious, you know? And so I love the ins and outs of that and really helping guide people through, because it is more complex than just eat your five serves of veg. And there's so much more than, you know, I'm sure you guys, you mentioned, you ask people you work with about diet, but what is a healthy diet? And there's so many, people have so many different ideas about that. So there's a huge idea of like this plant-based vegan diet is the healthiest diet you can have. There's a lot of documentaries on that and all sorts. And I'm certainly open to the idea that it can be a healthy diet, but it's hard to get it right. Like, you do need to be taking supplements. You need to be supplementing your B12. You're probably not getting enough zinc. A B12 deficiency, one of the key signs is anxiety. A zinc deficiency, again, one of the symptoms of that is anxiety, and we get most of our zinc from animal sources. So just things like that are so crucial and very, you know, particular within this space of what is a healthy diet. And so easy as well. So many, if I'm talking to a vegetarian or someone who's vegan, to not be getting enough protein, you know, or the other thing I'll see is lots of gut issues. And so they're reacting to legumes and they can't eat lots of chickpeas and black beans and things like that. And so that's your key source of protein, one of your really important ones, and your gut's not handling it. And so we have to kind of look at, is this really working for you, this diet, you know? And there's so much like that. But then, yeah, there'll be people who are eating everything and think that they're doing everything healthily, but it can be easy to miss stuff too.
100%. And just as you're speaking, and I think for a lot of people, there's so much conflicting information out there about what is the best diet or the most healthiest diet to be on, whether it's in regards to weight loss or treating something. You know, one minute it's go keto, cut carbs. The next minute it's no, go plant-based, raw vegan, you know, raw 2 or 4, eat 50,000 bananas a day. You know, don't forget your coconut oil and kale and all this stuff. I think it's so confusing for, you know, the everyday person that just wants to make sure that they are being as healthy as they can be, because there's so, like, the information is endless and it all conflicts with each other.
Yeah, don't get me started on the fruitarian 50,000 bananas in a day thing. That just that's a sore spot for me. Triggers me. But absolutely, and it's just, there's like, especially the fasting is such a popular thing, right? Mm. We think it's so healthy. But for the majority, I think it works generally, and very general speaking here, for men, it works better than for most women. You do need to be looking at it in a different way. When we fast too much, when we cut carbs too much, we lose our menstrual cycle. That's the first thing you got to kind of look at. If your menstrual cycle is reacting to this, then, you know, that's your fifth vital sign. It's a really important sign of balance within your whole body to be keeping aware of. And so I generally don't recommend fasting for people who are managing anxiety and high stress lifestyles, because it sends your blood sugar all over the place, and it's just not worth it when you could be having your nourishing meal grounding your body, sending your nervous system into that parasympathetic rest and digest mode three times a day, rather than kind of missing that dose of calm that you could otherwise have. And classically too, the clients who say, yeah, but I'm not hungry in the morning, so I don't mind fasting and not eating until lunchtime. You're not hungry in the morning because of the anxiety and the stress you feel when you wake up thinking about your to-do list, dreading the day, gotta go, go, go. Your nervous system is in fight or flight mode. So your body's not thinking about food, and that's why you're not hungry. But it's normal for us to be hungry. And if you're not hungry, then this is something to be aware of and to support. So there's certain ways we can do that, such as I love a bit of apple cider vinegar in the morning. Just a little splash of that with diluted with water. Never take it straight because you're going to burn your throat and make yourself nauseous. But with a bit of water, a bit of apple cider vinegar, like about 5 mils with 10 mils of water is perfect. And having that about 15 minutes before you eat will make you hungry for breakfast, and it sends you into that calm state. So why wouldn't we kind of like shift ourselves into that three times a day if we can, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Apple cider vinegar, you definitely do need water.
Yes, yeah. You can do lemon juice too. That's an alternative if like you, because all you're looking for there is the bitter taste, the bitter. Mm. And everyone says, but it tastes gross. And it's like, yes, because we want bitterness. Like we want the bitter. As long as it's enough to hit your tongue and make you salivate, that's how you know it's working. It's switching on your digestive system.
Sounds like a really good tip, and I really love that. So do you have any other recommendations? Say if, you know, a client's come to you and they're feeling really anxious, do you have any really quick recommendations for alleviating anxiety in an anxious mind from, I guess, your perspective?
Honestly, like I find the apple cider vinegar easy like that. You can use it to help yourself feel hungry for meals, but you can also use it to make yourself calm down if you need to. So it works a treat if you, whatever's happened, you had something really stressful happen at work, you get home and you're wound up and you just can't calm down, put a bit of apple cider or some lemon juice in a little bit of water and just see how that switches your nervous system out of that fight or flight mode. So this is all about triggering the vagus nerve. This is the main nerve highway that connects our brain to our gut. And we can basically, it happens automatically, but we have ways that we can switch it and we can turn it around. So another great one would be a 30-second cold shower. It stimulates the vagus nerve and gets you into that parasympathetic nervous system as well. So I do this every morning. Basically, I go straight into a cold shower because I'm weird, but also I'm kind of addicted to it now. And it's comes with the bonus of I can do something uncomfortable. Like I don't want to, I never really want to go into the cold, but it's like, oh, okay. And I did it anyway, you know? And so that sets up a really strong mindset for life as well. But other ways you can do it are with like, chanting Om, you know, singing, laughing, all of those things that you're getting the vibrations going around your throat, which is actually sets off your vagus nerve too. And probably my favorite go-to as well is the old legs up the wall. So it's like a yoga posture that you might have experienced before, but you can lie down, have your legs up, and so you're in like a bit of an L shape. And if you can hold that pose for about 15 minutes, you will naturally calm and relax. It's a beautiful way to unwind at the end of the day, especially if you've, you know, naughty, been working on your screen late at night and you're still like, you're just not ready for sleep at bedtime. And I always say to parents too, do this with your children when you're doing bedtime stories. They can do it too. And then it becomes this fun thing, like, why have we got our legs up in the air? And so that will calm them down. They'll get to sleep faster as well. And you get the benefits too for your nervous system. The reason it works is when we're in fight or flight mode, we want to run and we want to fight something. So the blood flow is predominantly in our limbs. But when we are calm and wanting to digest our food and all that, our blood flow moves predominantly around our abdomen. And so when you do go into this posture, you are directing with gravity the blood flow from your legs back to your abdomen. And it will release GABA, your calming neurotransmitter in your brain, and it triggers the vagus nerve too.
Yeah, those are some great, great tips. And another reason why it's so great to do that in the morning, like you mentioned, is not only to set up your mindset that, you know, you can do hard things and you can face your fears, is because we tend to typically have more cortisol, our stress hormone, in the morning, because anxiety usually functions, you know, to motivate us to get out of bed on time. And like you said, to do all the things that we need to do to get ready for the day. So yeah, by doing all those calming, grounding exercises in the morning, we're also releasing that cortisol as well. So
can't forget exercise as well. It's just so, so key. And just like, I don't know, for me, honestly, it has to be fun. We got to get rid of this like culture of like smashing yourself in these workouts. Like, it's got to be stuff that feels good for your body. And so I love a walk. You can never really argue against going for a walk, but you can argue against going for a run or going to a gym class, right? So doing something like just having a commitment to yourself that you do a walk pretty much every day, non-negotiable, will help your anxiety so much. Or bonus would be dancing. Like, put on a song that you love dancing to for like 5-10 minutes and just move your body and like move that anxious energy and cultivate joy too at the same time.
Yeah. And walking's so good for breath as well, I've noticed. Walking, if you can really focus on taking a few deep breaths, if you're on your own, you can pop on a really relaxing playlist. If you're feeling a little anxious, and I say this to clients, if you're feeling that anxiety and you're just not ready for an exercise class or a marathon run, working on your breath while you walk can have such, and it forces you to do that anyway as you walk, to really focus on your, you know, the diaphragmatic breathing. So exercise is such a great tool for so many reasons, but especially anxiety.
Yeah, and I see it really, I suppose the crucial point that I love to get across is that it's an opportunity to feel back into your body when you've been so up in your head. And that's what anxiety is, right? It's just, we're just all up in our head. We're not thinking about how our body feels predominantly. And, or unless it's that sort of style of being over hyper aware of your body, but I'm talking about being grounded in your body, feeling what it feels like to take those steps. And as you said, to notice your breathing, like notice you're alive right now. That's what I believe exercise should be. And not, I think when we're going too hard, we are numbing ourselves from our bodies. We don't want to feel it. It hurts. Push through the pain, you know?
Punishment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. The notion of exercising because you love your body and you're taking care of your body, not that you want to punish yourself for, you know, eating that one extra cookie or, you know, that you haven't reached your quote unquote goal weight. So you need to, you know, run that, you know, extra kilometer or whatever it may be. And also I think just the biochemical influence that exercise has over us, you know, the release of serotonin, dopamine, endorphins, it's an instant mood booster. And speaking of things that influence our mood, stress and sleep. So the same is true for, I guess, our mental health, but lack of sleep can affect our gastrointestinal organ, which can result in conditions like IBS, having just an upset tummy. Can you tell us a little bit more about how our gut influences our mood?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first thing I want to say is, like, when we are sleep deprived, if you've kind of been tossing and turning all night, you are missing out on this. Your gut basically does this whole sweep through at night. And I know a lot of people too can get into a habit of not sleeping well. So you kind of get up and then you might like have a snack and go back to bed. If you're missing that, this is where fasting is important. It's the sleep time where we fast, because it's like your gut does this sweep through of kind of clearing itself out. And if it's missing that component, you will get some changes happening to, the balance of your gut bacteria and things like that. In terms of the way that our gut impacts our mood, so obviously we know it goes both ways. If we're stressed, if we're anxious, we will either notice most of the time some looser stools, some diarrhea perhaps, or we'll get blocked up and things won't move very well. Most people tend to kind of fluctuate towards one predominantly, but then some of us just like, we have what we call alternating bowels, where it just goes either way. And it's just always changeable. Yeah, and hard to predict as well. And this is very much an idea, like there's definitely some stress and anxiety playing into that. The other way around is that our microbes they produce things like serotonin, as you said, and they also make chemical messengers that they send up your vagus nerve to your brain, telling your brain how to regulate some of those brain chemicals as well. So it's got a direct impact on what your brain is doing in terms of the levels of GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid. It's our anxiety off switch in the brain. It kind of calms you down. That's when you've had a big like hour-long massage and you just feel kind of drugged and you're just feeling really zen. That's when you've got lots of GABA in your brain. And that's the feeling we want to, well, not quite that extent, but we want to cultivate that sense more of the time. And the other way that our gut impacts our brain, well, there's a couple more, is that if we have inflammation in the lining of our gut, which this sounds like you've got to have, you know, full-blown Crohn's disease or some kind of like ulceration of the wall of your bowel, that's not the case. I'm talking about at the cellular level, just a mild amount of inflammation, we start to get a situation which you might have heard of before called leaky gut. Basically, this is where the cells kind of swell up and they separate from one another. There's these junctions between the cells that get damaged. And we have things getting into our bloodstream that otherwise wouldn't be there. And our immune system starts to see these things in our bloodstream that shouldn't be there and attacks. And so we get inflammation occurring. And so what this does is it means that when we have the way that it works, we've got studies to show this, when you have inflammation in the gut, you also have inflammation at the blood-brain barrier. Inflammation in the brain means that your body's ability to work with serotonin in the brain is impaired. So the serotonin pathway gets interrupted and various other factors like that. So we want to not have that inflammation in our gut so that we can calm down the inflammation in our brain. And this happens, I don't want to like freak anyone out when I say this word inflammation, it's happening to most of us. You know, I might have a little bit of inflammation in my gut right now and I know all the stuff and I do all the stuff. It's just modern life. You know, we're going to have, if you're a bit stressed, you're going to be, you're going to have a little bit more of this inflammation. If you go for a run, you're going to have more of this inflammation, right? But of course, then there's the bigger things like having a big boozy weekend, like lots of alcohol, certain medications and things as well. And then diet quality will all have an impact on it. So this fluctuates through your life. You're going to have days where, or weeks or months where there's less inflammation and your gut's working really well. And then you're going to have times where it's not so great because we are human beings and we're not projects to perfect. We are going through things. And so sometimes there'll be a stress that comes up or a challenge in your life. And undoubtedly your gut just needs a bit more support at that time. So that's how I'd see it. Just thinking like, oh, I'm really stressed at the moment. Maybe I'll get back on the probiotics. You know, that's just one way you can kind of think of it.
Love that. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about neurotransmitters and hormones and how they moderate, you know, with the microbiota gut-brain axis. Are you able to go into more detail with how that axis moderates anxiety and depression?
Yeah. So I suppose, I mean, it comes down to the really nitty-gritty of talking about, you know, what those actual neurotransmitters are doing, the serotonin, the GABA. I mean, serotonin itself, we still don't 100% know, you know, how these neurotransmitters are playing into it. And I must say, I love thinking about how we can alter the chemistry of our body and of our brain. But in terms of getting into the nitty gritty, I don't see it personally as a super useful thing to kind of worry about too much when we can also just know that, you know, spending 5 minutes dancing to a song, cultivating joy makes you feel good. What feels good is ultimately the most important thing. However, so we know that our gut microbes make serotonin. We know that influences the serotonin levels in our brain. We know that our gut microbes can influence how easily and how readily we can regulate when we are confronted with a trigger, for example, and we can come back to that producing more GABA, for example. And of course, a brain that is not inflamed, a brain that is working well, is also going to be better able to produce and function with those brain chemicals, because it's not just about the GABA, the serotonin, or the dopamine. It's also about the receptors on the cells of your brain cells, right? receiving and binding to those neurotransmitters. And so if there is some damage to those cells, maybe you're not getting enough essential fats, for example, like your omega-3s that we get from fish predominantly, or we can get algae sources as well. There are vegan varieties. Then there might be some damage to those receptors, and we might not be getting it as efficient a situation as possible. So this is the third way I was going to mention before, that your gut and your brain are linked as well, is that we need to be absorbing those nutrients to actually then use them, right, in our body, in our bloodstream. And if there's damage to the gut lining, that affects how readily and how easily we can absorb those nutrients. So you might be like taking all the supplements, you're smashing multivitamins, you're taking your Barocca or whatever it is. If the quality of the vitamin or the diet that you're consuming isn't in a state that is easily absorbed, that's going to be a factor. So some of those supplements, some of the cheaper supplements that you find in the discount bin, unfortunately, there's a reason they're cheap. And one of the side effects of that is that it's not going to be as readily absorbed by your gut. The more expensive stuff, they've generally put a bit more research into making sure it actually gets absorbed past your gut, past your gut wall into the blood on the other side. And that's where then we can use it. So we can use that zinc, that magnesium, B6, all of these nutrients which are the building blocks for our serotonin, our GABA, many of those neurotransmitters as well. So we want to be making sure your body's got plenty of those building blocks ready to use too.
I love that. And I love that your approach is that it's not that everything needs to be 100% perfect all the time. It's just giving your brain and body the best possible chance at increasing the serotonin and the GABA in our neurotransmitters and our bodies. And I think, you know, we do get clients who are trying to be so perfect with diet and exercise and sleep, and that's actually causing more anxiety. So I think it's so wonderful that it's just doing the best that you can and just, you know, giving your body the best possible chance at, you know, really calming down your nervous system. I think that's also something that we intervene. You know, I know that medication is SSRIs and all of, you know, the anti-anxiety, antidepressants. And I think one thing to look at for people who might be listening, who are thinking about maybe taking the medication route, is first looking at your, you know, your diet plays such a huge role. And that's something that we've been trying to educate clients about, is having a look at that before going down the medication route.
Yeah. And what's so exciting too, is we see enhanced effects of these medications when with certain, you know, with a diet improvement or with certain, supports there as well. So if you are getting enough sleep, if you are eating a balanced diet, there's your medication will work more effectively too.
Yeah. And we did touch on this a little bit before, but we know that healthy gut flora is critical to overall health and well-being. I guess, what are some additional recommendations or tips that you would say to us and our listeners to help stimulate that optimal gastrointestinal health through diet?
Yeah, excellent. So firstly, we need to feed our gut bacteria. And if we don't feed them what they want to eat, they will start eating you. So they start eating away at your gut wall and creating some of that inflammation. And this is actually where you mentioned the ketogenic diet before, like the really low carb diets. This is where they fall short, is that we don't get enough fiber predominantly. And so when you're missing out on fiber, your gut bacteria are starved, they are hungry, and they will start eating your gut wall. And so this is where some people on long-term keto diets end up needing gut support or having gut symptoms and things like that. So we need to feed them. They eat fiber predominantly. They love things like, I don't know if you've ever seen slippery elm, which is in certain, you can find that in your health food store and things like that, but just food, right? So leaving the skin on your veggies, making sure you give them a good wash, but then don't peel away all the skin, leave that on, you know, oats, nuts and seeds. And they also love to consume different colors. Now, this sounds weird, but they actually eat the polyphenols. These are the color pigments in fruits and vegetables. So, you know, when they say eat the rainbow, it's also feeding your gut bacteria. And the more that we get variety here, the more we're providing different food sources to feed different strains of bacteria and microbes. And this is where we see, when there's more diversity in the different species we have in our gut, we see better health outcomes. We see people who are more resilient and healthy. So, and less likely to, yeah, have certain diseases and things like that. So the variety that you're consuming is really important too. Making sure you're getting your greens. Yes, a lot of people are fairly good at that. But what about the yellow? What about the orange? What about the blue and the purple? They're easy to forget. So making sure you're getting the different colors too.
Eat the rainbow.
So that's just your gut microbes. The next thing would be healing your gut lining as well. So you want to be providing the building blocks to really reduce that inflammation. So let's say you've got your best friend's getting married and you've got her hen's party this weekend, and you just like know she's going to say you're a bad friend if you don't get around it. This is Australian culture, isn't it? So if I were in that situation, how I would think about it is firstly, yeah, feeding the gut bacteria, having that as your standard consistency, but thinking about how can I fortify and support my gut lining, knowing it's about to receive a bit of an onslaught. So that's where you could have, bone broth is an excellent choice. Collagen can be quite good as well. You can easily add that to smoothies. That's why I really like it, because it's versatile.
Bone broth, probiotics.
And then you could take probiotic too. And just replenishing and supporting your gut. So again, not always feeling like we have to be constantly taking supplements and things. You don't have to take a probiotic every day if you are feeding your gut bacteria and you are generally otherwise feeling quite good, or you are having a few fermented foods in there too that are giving you good gut bacteria, like your kefir or kimchi or sauerkraut. So these are the components of a healthy gut. And then of course, that's the kind of rebuild. We also have to then think about what's hurting our gut. And so that's your alcohol, if you can cut down on medications where possible, that's great. So just taking the bare minimum of what you need. For example, do you need to take the ibuprofen every time you get a headache, or could you maybe just make sure you're drinking more water, or you're maybe reducing your workload? Like maybe there's some lifestyle changes that need to happen here. And then also looking at, getting enough sleep, all of those things also have an impact on the state of our gut.
This might be a strange question, but can you tell me the difference between a prebiotic and a probiotic?
Yes, it's not a strange question at all. So prebiotic is a fancy word for fiber, and it means that people can put it in a supplement and label it and market it and sell it to you, when really you can get prebiotics from the skin on your vegetables, oats, psyllium husk, all of those things are full of fiber and they are feeding your good bacteria. So the prebiotic is the food for the bacteria. The probiotic is the actual bacteria in a capsule that you can consume. But you can also get those, as I said, through food. You can get it through kimchi, kefir, sauerkraut, kombucha, all these wonderful fermented foods.
Yeah, and they're becoming quite popular now, aren't they? Kombucha's become such a norm in grocery stores.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when I'm trying to get someone to cut down or stop soft drink, or even alcohol, because it's such a easy one. You feel like you're having a cocktail or something, even when it gives you the fizzy enjoyment sort of feeling. It's nice on a warm afternoon.
Yeah, in summer.
Yeah.
Kombucha. Yes. So for our listeners who are listening and they're thinking, okay, I have been noticing that maybe my gut health isn't great, or maybe they're maybe noticing some links between their anxiety, their depression with the foods that they eat. When would you recommend that somebody does reach out for support from a nutritionist or a naturopath?
Good question. I suppose it would be like, especially when you think, but you're kind of like struggling to implement, you needing that support to kind of really, and the guidance to know you're getting it right. If you're going to put all that effort in to do this diet, or why isn't it working? Like I'm eating all the healthiest things. This is like the classic, like plant-based person who's just like, my gut has all these symptoms and I'm bloated all the time. Experiencing a lot of bloating would be key, because that often requires a deeper sort of treatment protocol to kind of go through. And I'm not talking about like bloating because you just ate a really heavy meal once. Like I'm talking about daily bloating, quite painful, especially under the bra line or lower down on along the underwear line. That's where this is something that can be worked with. Other things would be, knowing that you can never really predict your bowels, how they're going to move. It's sometimes it's diarrhea, sometimes it's constipation, or just never feels normal. And that can be tricky too, because a lot of people they don't know what how good it can be because they've just always experienced it that way.
What would you say a perfect stool should look like?
Good question. I'm glad you asked. So generally it's got to be, we say well formed. So it's all in one piece, like a sausage, basically easy to pass. And when you wipe, you don't need to wipe multiple times. That's like your ideal poo. But most of us are not having bowel motions like that a lot of the time because we're so stressed. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say just go with your gut a bit as well on this, like whether you think, okay, like I really believe there's something going on with the way I'm eating or I'm missing some nutrients or something, and I'd love to explore, you know, what those other options are. But I would always recommend, you know, doing that work with a psychologist as well and having that support. I think it works beautifully together.
Yeah, definitely. I like that pun too, go with your gut.
Exactly.
A little bit of a different question for you. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, so good. I would tell my younger self. Well, I basically am giving advice to my younger self every day. Basically what I'm doing. I'm like, girl, you don't need to get this perfect. Like it's actually the only reason we ever want something is because we think we're going to feel a certain way when we have it. Right. So if we're, you know, there definitely were the motivations for me when I was younger to lose weight and look a certain way in my body and all of that. The only reason I wanted those things was because I thought that would make me feel happier, feel more calm, feel more confident, feel more peaceful. When in reality, like our mind is never satisfied. The peace is something that we can tune into at any time, really. We can do it every day. It's always available to us if we can step back from our thoughts and just realize that it's not about the external stuff. It's just literally what you're seeking for. It's so cliche, but it's been within you all along. So that's kind of what I'd tell my younger self, is to kind of look within. And, you know, it's the feeling of like when you're dancing and you're just so in your body and so in the music and moving how your body wants to move, not moving because of how you look. Mm. It's the most liberating thing. And that's how I can kind of communicate this sense of peace and freedom within, that it's not about, you know, how much you weigh or what you look like in that moment.
I love that. And hopefully some of our younger listeners are listening and they take that on board. Now, we did ask on Instagram this week, we've got some questions for you, Georgie, and we are putting you on the spot. So,
all righty. So I love this question. I think this is one that a lot of people will relate to, and it is how to deal with weight gain and anxiety.
Ooh, okay. Well, this kind of almost goes back to what I was just saying. Because the thing is, the weight is usually coming on because there's likely to be some emotional eating going on, some numbing to the anxiety because you're terrified to feel it because it's painful and it's scary. And the weight is not really the issue here. It's the side effect. The issue here is how you manage your emotions and your well-being, which I'm sure you guys can well understand as well. And so it's about that journey is not going to be about losing weight, going on a diet. I would not start with a diet for this person. I would start with, well, you know, maybe like, let's try and get some more, let's start with a smoothie for breakfast or something like that, right? Like little changes that don't feel restrictive. But I would not be putting this person on a diet. I would be leading them more towards accepting themselves, accepting their emotions, how they feel. Oh, like letting yourself cry, letting yourself feel, because that's why we eat, to numb ourselves. And that's why we get cut off from what feels good in our body. When you can tune back into what is feeling good, in terms of like movement, can actually feel really good. Going for a walk or dancing, and then doing those things because you're honoring yourself and you're turning it back into loving yourself, not hating yourself. That is where I would start. That's the root of this. It's not about the food. It's not even about the behavior. It's about if you are more aware of your body and coming back to your body, connecting back to your body, not disconnecting from it all the time, you will naturally your body will naturally fall back into balance and the weight will naturally fall off in a more lasting way anyway. So it's a journey to go through, but it's really deeper than just the food.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think it is about getting to the root of where does the anxiety come from around weight gain and what does that mean for this person? Where is that fear kind of stemming from? And, you know, is there an underlying insecurity or an underlying core belief that is, you know, symptomology of weight gain or fear around weight gain?
Yeah, there's a, you know, cycle you can get in there where it's like, oh my God, I'm gaining weight. So I've got to, I give up on myself or I hate myself. I feel disgusting. I've got all this like heavy, icky energy to deal with. What am I going to do with it? I don't want to feel it. So I'll eat more or I'll, you know, I don't want to feel it. Right. And that's the issue. And going to those cores of where it's come from. Absolutely.
And I think also with weight gain as well, we don't know about this listener, but perhaps a weight gain might be healthy. Perhaps they might be going back to that homeostasis of where their body is the most comfortable. And I think we've been received so many messages, especially as women, that weight gain is bad, but perhaps, you know, it might be a visit to a naturopath or nutritionist or dietitian. Perhaps your weight gain might actually be your body trying to tell you something.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You're so true. I mean, I totally made an assumption there that this was someone who, yeah, is concerned about how their size in a sense of having an unhealthy amount of weight that they want to lose or whatever it might be, or just knowing that their body isn't comfortable at this weight. But you're absolutely right. It could be going that other way. And of course, I would direct this person to seek support and guidance. You don't have to do this on your own, whatever your situation is.
Yeah, I love that. So we have another question. Our second question, is there any difference between a vegan diet and an omnivore diet and its effects on mental health?
Oh, well, I almost went there already, didn't I? It depends. It depends what the vegan diet is. A vegan diet can be healthy, but it's really hard and you tend to need to be taking quite a number of supplements because you need to be getting the omega-3, which you're just not getting enough of, and it's not efficiently converted in our body. So chia seeds, for example, have omega-3, but it's not efficiently converted into the omega-3 the same way that it is from fish, for whatever reason. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. So there can be the vegan diet. It's also, if you're not taking B12, you could be B12 deficient, which is going to lead to more anxiety. In terms of an omnivore diet, you've got more choice, you've got more freedom. You know, if you want to be vegan, but you kind of got some leeway of like, you could throw an egg in there that's been like raised on a happy hen farm. Oh, that makes me like, that just like makes me relax about this, because it's like, you're getting your B12, you're getting omega-3, you're getting a really high quality source of protein. There's even some iron in the egg yolk. Like that is, that just takes the pressure off you to need to take all these supplements and be kind of like monitoring your diet all the time. You know, I went through that phase for a bit myself, when I was sort of experimenting with what was the best diet. And I honestly was so in my head about making sure I was getting all the nutrients all the time that, it wasn't worth it. And so I love the relaxedness. Like I will frequently have days where I don't consume animal products for whatever reason. I don't really think about it. It's just because I just did, but having the animal products in there does give you a sense of relaxation, flexibility, knowing you're meeting all your nutritional needs. And so I would say, you know, if it's environmental concerns that are part of this, sure, eat less of that stuff by all means. But is there a need to be, you know, a martyr here and be completely 100% free of all of those products, especially when we consider that the origin might be more ethical? Like I said, happy hen farm potentially. I would say give yourself the flexibility. If it was me, that's what I would do anyway. And everyone's got their own perspective on this, but from a nutritional perspective, yeah, make life easier for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. It just allows for that bit extra balance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And choice, like you say. Another listener question that we had was, are there any food supplements to support weaning off antidepressants?
Ooh, okay. Yes, I like, so I'm trained in herbal medicine as well. And in terms of weaning off antidepressants, it's got to be a conversation that happens with your doctor or psychiatrist. 100%, they have to be on board with this. But what can assist the process in terms of herbal medicine, I would lean towards thinking about things like St. John's wort, which have a similar effect in the body. But you want to go for the low hypericin form of St. John's wort. This is again where if it's a little bit more expensive, it's probably because it's the higher quality form that has less side effects and things. There've been some side effects with St. John's, but with the low, that form, it's much better. So you could potentially kind of wean off the antidepressants and slowly build up the St. John's wort. Saffron can be amazing as well. There's been some really cool studies into that. But in terms of nutritionals, you know, looking at those building blocks for how we can help support the body to make more serotonin and GABA. So your zinc, B6, magnesium, they would really be the top three I would think of, to be honest. And then checking your iron levels as well, because when we are low in iron, it can affect obviously our hemoglobin concentration in our red blood cells, which means how well we can carry oxygen around the body. And we want to be making sure we're getting oxygen to the brain. If you're low in iron, it can, one of the symptoms we see is anxiety and sometimes depression too, because, and low energy, just because your brain's not getting enough of that oxygen it needs.
Love that. That's a really good advice. Thank you. Great. Our last and final listener question, Georgie, thank you for being so patient with your time. This person has asked, using food as a form of self-sabotage or emotional eating, I know you visited some themes of disconnection. Do you have any more ideas on that?
Yeah. So, cause I've done this, you know, like I went through the binge eating and the emotional eating, and you know, it's funny, like maybe even in the last like couple of weeks, I've emotionally eaten at some point, but I don't see it the same way. I don't like, in the sense of, you know, I was just like, oh, I'm just gonna have some chocolate, right? And I think it's normal to do that. So there's a sense of like, there has to be an allowance for some normal, you know, eating certain foods, and again, not having the perfection. So I don't see it as an issue, but I used to binge, like, and it was a whole different thing. It was like, so I know what that's like. I would certainly say like, seek support, don't do this alone, but it really does come back to, yeah, feeling into your body, connecting back to your own hunger signals, feeling how good it feels to be really hungry for a meal and then digest your food properly and not always overloading yourself. It can be so easy to just constantly be overloading or over consuming at each meal, and listening to when your body's actually full. And all of this is assisted by doing practices like exercising in a way that feels good. I keep going back to the dancing, but it's just so, so key. Feeling back into your body and not trying to escape your body constantly. And probably for me, a big shift happened when I was talking to a close friend of mine who kind of said, what if this, like, you making this such a problem for yourself, you're really focusing on this being the problem that you have. What if you kind of stop believing in yourself as having this big problem with food? And I know that sounds so easily said, but starting to shift the identity of myself being someone that has an issue with food was huge for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think that's so something that we do get worked up is if we think that we're an emotional eater, that's something that we identify with, isn't it? It's like, oh, I'm such an emotional eater. I'm, you know, I really self-sabotage. And I love that you're constant themes of disconnect, because I think another thing with disconnect is that we do disconnect from hunger signals and what feels right for our body. I think we look online and think, oh cool, an 8-week diet, that would suit me, but that might not be what you like to eat. And I think that eating, for some people, it's I eat it because I have to, not because I enjoy it. And there goes so much of that natural craving and knowing what makes us feel good and what tastes good for us, that I have to eat it because it's good, not because I really enjoy it at all.
Yeah. And look, binge eating, emotional eating, binge eating cannot occur without a restrictive phase before. So you only end up binge eating because you have tried restricting in the past, and that might have been a diet you were trying to follow. Or, oh my God, the thoughts I used to have when I was in high school about like, oh, what if I just like don't, what if I just eat vegetables, only vegetables for the next week? then I'll like be ready for the formal or whatever. And it's just like these thoughts we have, you know, and it sets you up for binging. So just always understanding when you have the idea of like the restriction on the other side of that binging or whatever, the emotional eating, like thinking you have to compensate, knowing that's only going to drive you into another one. So the only answer is moving towards more balance and connecting back to your body to find that equilibrium again.
Definitely. And being more mindful when we eat too. I know that for a lot of us, binge eating or emotional eating can almost become habitual as well. You know, it's you know, our go-to without even stopping, like you say, and thinking about, well, what am I thinking? What am I feeling before I reach for that, you know, tub of ice cream or, you know, whatever our comfort food may be. We don't call it comfort food for nothing. It actually does provide us with a bit of an intrinsic reward short term, and then we feel like crap afterwards. But switching to a more mindful, having more mindful habits around our eating. So for example, not sitting down to eat in front of the TV or scrolling on our phone all the time, like actually pausing and really tasting the flavor of our food. That might sound a little bit silly, but actually a little bit like what you were saying, Kat, actually enjoying and stopping and feeling our body feel full and satiated.
Yeah.
And knowing the difference between that disconnected, just binging to kind of get rid of that uncomfortable feeling, and eating to fuel our body.
And I think it's also having tools. Like so many of us, we lean on food because it's the easiest one, and it's so perpetuated in our society of like, oh, have some chocolate, it'll make you feel better. Have some ice cream, it'll make you feel better. And so we learn that young, and it's also the thing that's there for us when no one else is. I've got to deal with all my emotions on my own. I've got all this stuff I need to deal with. I don't want to bother. Like maybe mum's not around. Maybe your best friend's not around. So I'll just try and do it on my own. And that's often where I believe it starts as well. And look, one other idea I'll add in there too, that I was just thinking when you were with what you last said, was I actually deliberately, mindfully, emotionally eat. I don't know, probably once a week at least, like just because I'm aware that's balance for me. That's flexibility for me. If I'm too perfect about things, like I kind of need to shake it up almost and like just let myself know, like chocolate's available to you. It's okay. You can have this. Yeah. It's all good. It's not a big deal. And that helps me to stay in a really balanced state around food too.
Yeah, definitely. It's that attunement to yourself, isn't it? And not having forbidden foods. Like there is no such thing as good food or bad food. There are foods that are higher in nutrients, and there are foods that, you know, you might, food for the soul, that you just really enjoy, like sharing a pizza with a friend, or, you know, sitting down and just enjoying savoring that block of chocolate after a bit of a stressful day. I agree. I think there's a big difference.
Yeah.
So Georgie, that is the end of our listener questions. Thank you so much for helping, and I hope that answered some of our lovely listener questions. So for anyone who's wanting to learn more about you, you have a wonderful podcast, a beautiful website Amy and I were admiring, and you've just announced that you're doing a retreat. So for anyone who's interested to learn more about you, Georgie, where can our listeners find you?
Well, I would say check me out on Instagram, at Georgie the Naturopath. That's where I hang out and update things the most. But otherwise, the Anxiety Reset podcast is where I hang out too. And you can check things out at my website. It's funny you said you like my website, because I'm like, it really needs an update.
Oh, no.
It's so funny.
We loved it. We thought it was so beautiful and calming. It had such a calming effect, and I was looking at it before.
Thanks, guys. Obviously, that's my little inner critic poking in there. But but yes, my website is georgiecollinson.com as well.
Perfect. I will leave all of that in the show notes for all of our listeners to hop on through and have a little browse. So Georgie, we really appreciate you taking the time on to come and tell us all of your beautiful sage wisdom about anxiety and gut health. And we've definitely learned so much from you in our hour and a half on a Monday. So we really appreciate it. So thank you so much.
It's a public holiday Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're extra honored.
Oh, you guys are welcome. It's honestly been such a pleasure. I've loved chatting and getting to know you both.
Ditto.
Thanks, Georgie. So nice to speak to you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you're not already, please follow us on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. We are also now providing online psychological sessions. For more information, please follow us at The Psych Collaborative. See you next time.